Hello everyone, welcome to Chan Podcast. Here is where you learn about meditation and Chan. So, what is Chan? Chan, spelled as C-H-A-N, is the Chinese school of Mahayana Buddhism and is the originating tradition of Japanese Zen. We encourage you to learn and practice meditation with a group. If you'd like to, feel free to visit our website londonchanmeditation.org.
So today's topic for this talk is cultivating compassion in this difficult time. It seemed to me that this is the second time that I'm talking about compassion. If I remember correctly, my last talk was also compassion. So I will first concentrate on different time, on this second part of the topic. And well, it is a huge topic. There is a lot of difficulties. We could certainly call this time difficult time, because there is all kind of crisis going on. But from the Buddhist perspective, I would like to say that, and I'm sure you all know it very well, the life is dukkha, the life is suffering. And what it really means is that in our experience, there is a constant change of states, pleasant states and unpleasant states, or states of unhappiness, states also of happiness, and there is a continual change of those various states. So it is like continuously going up and down. So the dukkha of suffering does not mean that we are continuously immersed in suffering as normally understood. So suffering contains itself the usual states of happiness and joy as well. But precisely because of this continuous change, there is this kind of dissatisfaction, because we can't rely on anything. And because things are continuously changing. And there is this continuous tendency also to hold on to states which are pleasant, which are happy, and avoid those states which are connected with unpleasantness, with unhappiness, and difficulties. So precisely this tendency to hold on one and to avoid other is what makes our life really suffering, because it's not possible to do that. Most of the time it's not possible to do that. So what is described now could see as a result of our personal karma, our individual karma. So our various activities of mind, speech, and body brings back retributions to us. And this is what we call individual or personal karma. But in the same time, we could say that we experience something such in which we can call collective karma as well. So collective karma is a result of activities or doings, or what we are all together doing, what we are collectively doing. So we also experience this collective karma, not just the individual one. And collective karma as individual karma also changes, well, the effects, what we are experiencing as a result of collective actions is also changing in time. So we could say that there are periods of prosperity, there are periods of peace, and periods in which our life is going well and okay. But also there are periods social unrests, there are periods of conflicts, periods of wars, periods of poverty, and all those difficult things we do as a human from time to time and experience. So we could say that this is a result of our collective karma. And when we call this time in which we all live now, then we call the time difficult time. We call it so because at the moment we are experience retribution or effects of our collective doings. And this present pandemic, which now with us almost 2 years, is one of the crises which make our life very, very difficult moment. And it changed our life a lot. It changed the way we live. Great number of people has died, and a lot of people lost their jobs, and there is all these kind of negative emotion which arises in us as a result of this crisis. Being lonely, being isolated, and so on. So we are all deeply aware of how this crisis is affecting us. But this crisis, as every phenomena, is a result of various causes and conditions. And what I want really to say is that this crisis does not stand on its own. And we have to look at it from the maybe wide perspective. And to look at it from the wider perspective, we can go back to back in time when industrial revolution started actually. And this industrial revolution make us all progress very, very, very fast due to technological inventions and scientific achievements. Those things affected all spheres of our life. And suddenly we found ourselves living in a way which was unimaginable before. We were simply enjoying this comforts which modern technologically and scientifically developed civilization was giving us. But in this time, in the same time, there were these side effects of this fast development we were not aware of. And this, when I mentioned the side effects, I think first of all of enormous pollution of air pollution of water pollution, of earth pollution, nothing. And this pollution was a result of the fact that this development was based on a fossil fuel, which it uses as main source of energy. And this is how we actually cause the ecological crisis. And this ecological crisis is going actually very, very deep. Our economic system, which brought all this development, is based on greed, is based running for profit, is based on the idea of continual growth in a situation of limited resources. And in the meantime, our population were going from in 3 billion. I remember when I was young, it was like 3 billion people on Earth, and now there is a seven or more than 7 billion of people. And by this greed-driven economical system, the production increased enormously, as well as the consumption also increased enormously. And the result of all this, to make this story short, is this, that we found ourselves now in a situation to experience the result of this fast development. And this result is precisely this huge ecological crisis, which usually is called the global warming. And the global warming creates climate change. And the climate change is something which we all experience. Something which is just a theory of some scientists who constantly warn us about it. This is something which we all can experience and witness, that it is happening to us right now. For example, this summer, we all witnessed this heat waves with temperature rising almost to the 50 degrees Celsius in Canada. I think that was called Lytton, and that later on caused the fire. So all these cases of high temperature, you know, cases in which they never happened before. All these floods, like a recent one in New Orleans and New York, caused by hurricane. And also this summer we had unusually big flood in Germany and Belgium. Some 180 people, I think, died at that time, which is very strange for Germany. I don't think it can be for Germany is a very organized country, and with all these measures for protection and so on. But the amount of water was so huge that they couldn't do anything. That was the there were casualties as well at that time. And of course, the fires in California, fires in other places around the world. These all are actually signs of or how to say, result of global warming and climate change, which is show us in these extreme weather conditions. And sure, we are all aware of this. You know, the global warming is at the moment, I think, the most dangerous crisis we are really in. Much greater than pandemic as such. So for this reason, I wanted to say something about talking about difficult time which we are in, because most of people are concerned at the moment with the pandemic, because this is something they have to deal with immediately. But behind it, there is this huge crisis which we have to deal with. And I also wanted to show that these two crises are really separate. You know, the global warming, the ecological crisis, climate change, the way we our economy. This is all connected, and the pandemic, is somehow a result of that. If you just think of a huge deforestation and destroying the animal habitat causing disappearance of species, and in that way endangering the biosphere in general, what could we expect? What could we expect? It is all actually caused altogether. It is caused in the way we see ourselves in the nature. It is caused by the way we relate to the nature. And as long as there is this anthropocentric view and attitude present, that basically means that we see ourselves different from nature, separated from nature, with the intention to conquer the nature, and simply using it for our own purposes, nature in general, but the includes of course the whole biosphere. It includes animals as well. So this way of relating to nature, this way of treating the nature, this way of treating the animals, of course, brings all kind of negative results. And in my opinion, this is precisely what is happening, this pandemic. the way you treat animals is turning back to us. Form of various diseases which were not present, which were more present before. So I think that when we think about this difficult time, it's good to go back. It's good to have this wider view. It's good to see what causes what, and how all those difficulties came about, and what they are a result of. I think that that kind of understanding is very important if you really want to do anything about it. And it is the last moment for to be awakened to the fact that we have to change our lifestyle. We have to change the way we see ourselves in nature, the way we treat animals. Generally, we have to make drastic transformation in our views and our habits and in the way we live. If we want to restore the balance which was lost by our own activities, our collective activities, and now you may ask yourself what it has to do with compassion and collecting compassion, and I think it has a lot. It has a lot to do with the compassion, because in all what I have just said so far, there was no compassion really present. It was just a result of us being separated from nature and being separated from each other. Thinking that somehow we exist separately on our own, and that brings us in conflict with others, it brings us in conflict with nature, it brings in conflict with everyone and everything. So that view has to be changed, and we can say that in that kind of attitude, there is no really place for compassion. There's no compassion there. So on the other hand, when we think about cultivating the mind, very often there is this understanding that cultivation of mind is something. Well, it's kind of individual practice. It's something which is happening on cushions, in the isolation of our rooms, or in our meditation halls. That again is a kind of wrong understanding. But very often, even in practitioners' understanding, that mistake can happen. You know, that we see our practice is somehow separated from our daily life, separated from the way we are engaged in the world in general. And and we can really sometimes practice in a way that practice becomes somehow our own business, which has nothing to do with other people and anything around us. I remember one time she told us about a practitioner in retreat who was cleaning toilet, And he was so absorbed in the clean toilet that he completely lost sight of a number of people who was waiting outside for use the toilet. And there is also the story about the monk who was sent to wash the rice. And as he was washing the rice on the bank of the river, and he washed rice and washed. And at one point, he came back and the cook was asking him, "Where is the rice? I won't cook the rice I gave you to wash." And the monk said, "Well, you did not tell me that you will be cooking this rice, that this rice is for cooking." So the cook asked, "But where is the rice?" And he said, "Well, it was washed river." So the river took away the rice which he is washing. And there is a two way in which we can understand this. On one way, in practice, it is necessary to develop concentration. It is necessary to use a method in such a way and to develop concentration, develop calmness, and for that we need to isolate ourselves from the outside world. But on the other hand, if we are really to cultivate our minds and bodies through mindfulness and awareness, we have to extend that mindfulness and awareness to our environment, to other people, become aware of other people, becoming aware of nature as well, and become aware of in what way we are acting, in what way we to what we really contribute by the way we act in relation to ourselves and in relation to other and in relation to nature as well. I think that is very important, that from being aware of ourselves, that we open up that awareness to include others and to include nature. Because this is how actually compassion develops. Compassion, it is nothing else but the awareness of others. It is awareness of nature also. So once we become aware, once we extend this awareness, once we deepen this awareness, we become aware also of our interconnectedness. Become aware of how everything is really, really interconnected. And once we become aware of that, compassion is naturally arising ourselves. It's already there. It is a result of that kind of insight. And compassion, we understand then that as awareness of other people's suffering, awareness of what others are going through, awareness of what is it they really experience, awareness of their needs. So then there is a compassion, there is awareness of all those things. And also, one very important aspect of compassion is our wish to alleviate the suffering of others. So these two things always goes together. And in that sense, compassion is enormously powerful healing quality, if I can say so. Compassion, whenever compassion is present, We can heal ourselves, we can heal others, and also we can heal nature as well. We can remove those effects of what we did to nature by discovering our interconnectedness, by discovering that we are actually inseparable from the nature, that we are part of it. And having a compassion is, I would say, the main force which can help us restore the balance which we destroyed before by acting in the way we were acting, and treating the nature we were treating the nature. So this is how I see the role of compassion in our intention to change the way we relate to ourselves, others, and to nature. So the compassion is, as I said earlier, the major force which can help us do that. Because only through great compassion we will be motivated and giving our whole being to bring about the change which is at this time really need. And this compassion can manifest, and usually it is manifesting through responsibility. First, through responsibility. You know, feel the compassion for ourselves, and responsibility for our own being, and having compassion for others, bring responsibility for others, feeling responsible for how others people are doing and how they are feeling. And having compassion for nature is also a kind of sensibility towards the nature. So it is not just responsibility, there's also the great respect. This insight into interconnectedness brings compassion, but it also, well, it brings passion, it brings responsibility, but it also brings respect. And it brings gratitude as well. And if we somehow give rise to these qualities of a responsibility, respect, and gratitude, then we have a chance to change this situation and turn these difficult times to good times for all of us. I think that is very, very, very important. And you know, we are not really aware of what these, well, mostly not of what this crisis is really teaching us. Is teaching us about how fragile the cushions are which support our way of life and the living in general. And these conditions are very, very fragile. Even the climate, you know, this climate is there for some 10,000 years maybe. know, before that, the conditions for life is extremely, extremely difficult. And our whole civilization were able to rise on the basis of this stable climate. And the climate is stable in this way for maybe some 10,000 years. And before maybe several centuries, it was unimaginable for us to influence the climate. Think about the changes in climate, because the population on Earth, human population on Earth, was very, very small, and nature was enormously strong and powerful, pervading everywhere. But with this enormously fast development from Industrial Revolution up to now, that has drastically changed. You know, and now we are the ones who are actually causing this climate change. And by doing that, we are destroying the very foundation for life on Earth, not just us human, but also for other species, for biosphere in general. And into that, I think has to give rise to compassion, and has to give rise to responsibility, and has to move us into the direction to do something about it. You know, so. As a practitioner, I think that we should extend our practice from our cushions and rooms and our chapels into our everyday life, and use those principles which we learn practice in order to live in a sustainable way. And what that really means is that we have to simplify our life as a response to these crises in which we are. We have to simplify our life. And to simplify our life means really to lessen our attachments. And it means also to differentiate between our wishes and our needs. I think that is a very important thing. And also when we're buying the things, that we know why we are buying them. What is it that we are buying? When we go into stores to buy for something, we can carry our own bag, not use plastic bags, and not use a plastic which is for one use only at all. And I won't go now into details. I'm sure that most of you are aware. In a chant retreat, we actually learn the simplicity of living. We learn to find content which does not depend on the material things, which does not depend on the outside things. And this is what we have to apply in our daily life, living the life of simplicity, life of contentment, having not too many wishes, but be mainly concerned with our needs. This can give enormous contribution to alleviate the suffering and to get out of this crisis. And I think also that our these centers has to become the centers of inspiration for to live in Spain. I'm sure they already are, but I'm also sure that there is a much more which can be done in that respect. So I think that in our evening service there is this short poem. It is admonition to practice or something like that. It's called when we have this sense that we should this like our heads are in fire. You know, there is a kind of urgency coming out of that saying. We should practice like our heads are in fire. But you know, in this situation, in this time in which we are now, it is a literal truth. You know, we are all in flames. Our heads are in flames because of global warming, because of climate change, because this situation which requires really urgent action from us. And it has to go from the bottom up and from the to the bottom as well. Because if we think that we as individual can't really change anything, that is not a good attitude. That is not a good attitude. We have to think that we as individual can contribute and know what we do. And also we have to influence other people in thinking the same way. So individually and collectively we have to take this situation very seriously and do what is in our power to restore the balance which we, by our own doing, were actually creating. We created an imbalance. But I will repeat that the main force behind is a compassion, and the compassion is arising with the opening of our minds, with extending awareness, with the wisdom which arises as a result of that. So the wisdom and compassion always has to go together, and that always brings sensibility and the healing power. It gives us a healing power. And we had to use this healing power in the right way, in the right direction. So I will end my talk here. I think time is out already. I hope this was not too depressive. because I try to talk about difficulties which we're all facing. And I try to illuminate to a certain extent the causes of those difficulties, and I was trying to show how all this is very, very connected, and it is also, of course, connected with our own views and our own understanding of our place in the world, our relation to nature, to other people. So it is all there. It is all there. And we did it. And we can also undo it. We can change. And I think that's a very positive message in the end. And it is not that visual practice is somehow in contradiction to acting in the world in this way. Not at all. There is no really difference between the two. And I think this is also something I wanted to emphasize. That we have to understand our own practice in a much wider way from what sometimes maybe we understand. Okay, so I will end my talk here, and I'll be glad if I could answer your questions.